shift through the morning. Most will see some good sunny spells, but into the afternoon the cloud will gather. We'll see rain arrive onto the Welsh coast by the middle part of the afternoon. That will spread to all other areas during the rest of the afternoon and early evening. Temperatures only around 4 to 9 degrees. For Northern Ireland, frosty, icy, maybe foggy to begin with. The sunshine will be short-lived though through the morning, clouding over quite quickly, and through the afternoon turn increasingly wet with a tiny bit of snow for the Antrim Hills and the Sperrins. That turns back to rain later as temperatures lift to around 6 degrees. But through the night that follows and into Wednesday, much milder, cloudier and wetter conditions for all of us.
Thank you very much, Matt. Now on Radio 4, our new book of the week. Wartime, occupied France, an English woman caught there. These circumstances face the aunt of Nicholas Shakespeare, whose experiences were only sketchily known to her family, until, that is, the author decided to find out more. He reads from his recent account, Priscilla.
My aunt Priscilla, my mother's sister, was a figure of unusual glamour and mystery in my childhood. She lived on a mushroom farm on the Sussex coast with her second husband, Raymond. Priscilla invited us for weekends at their home in East Wittering, and whenever her name was mentioned on the journey from London, I craned forward in the back of my parents' car. From an early age, I was conscious that my aunt was the sort of woman that men fell for. As our mauve Singer Gazelle turned into the lane leading to Church Farm, there would be speculation about how late we were going to be, and whether Raymond, a tyrant for punctuality, would, this time, serve mushrooms. To a seven-year-old boy, a mushroom in the early 1960s was a fantastic thing, almost as exotic, in its way, as my aunt. Her home was a red-brick Georgian house built next to a 12th-century church. It was bitterly cold, austere, with rotten furniture. But behind it all, there was something romantic. Raymond had raced Bugattis at Brooklands before the war. He boasted that Priscilla was a fast driver too. Although I never remember my aunt at the wheel, I marvelled that Raymond chauffeured her each time in a different sports car, a black Aston Martin, a second-hand red Ferrari, a green Hotchkiss, and once a Fassel Vega, which was supposed to go 100 miles an hour backwards, as well as forwards. In addition to his cars, Raymond owned a succession of motor yachts. Each year he sailed Priscilla over to France, once taking my father as a crew member. Horse racing was another passion. From my eavesdroppings in the car, I picked up that my uncle was capable of sweeping acts of generosity, but kept his wife on a short leash. Priscilla could sometimes rely on receiving his winnings, at which point she would bolt to Hermès and spend an exorbitant sum on an alligator handbag. Raymond was proud that in 16 years of marriage, he and Priscilla had never spent a night apart. If he had a business meeting, he made sure to return the same evening. Nonetheless, the extent to which Raymond controlled Priscilla was blatant even to me, and I recall feeling that my aunt seemed out of place, a prisoner, almost, at Church Farm, despite her surrendering acceptance. Even though I was only a child, and Priscilla a woman in her late 40s, I felt protective of her. I remember her frowning over a book or a crossword, cigarette between fingers, she smoked a lot, and never far away a glass of something with a slice of lemon in it. Most of the time, she vanished upstairs. She spent long periods on her bed reading or playing cards or asleep. Her dressing table was arranged with hairbrushes, combs, mirrors, all enamelled. I have a vivid memory of the room because at the foot of the double bed was the first television I laid eyes on. The compact bulbous screen rested on a wooden chest which had a padded top, striped black and white, and it was a special occasion as a boy to be allowed to sit and watch, sometimes, with Priscilla. My favourite image of my aunt was a portrait of her as a young woman that hung on the wall at the bottom of the staircase. It was by the Hungarian artist Marcel Vertes, and captured Priscilla as she had looked in pre-war Paris. The gouache was painted in 1939 when Priscilla was 23. It showed her wearing a gold-flecked jacket and green hat designed by Elsa Schiaparelli, for whom she modelled at the time. Although my aunt must have been double the age of the young woman in the portrait, she resembled her, tall, a little less slim, but with her ash-blonde hair falling loose and the same horizon-blue eyes. The artist had caught a vulnerability which I recognised. From the beginning, I am sure of two things. First, her sheer attractiveness. She reminded me of Grace Kelly in one of the films I watched in her bedroom. Her laugh was rejuvenating, and I noticed that she transformed my parents' mood, and mine. She was the delicacy that we went to Church Farm, always hoping to savour. Our champignon de Paris. The second thing I'm sure of was her sadness. She seemed weighed down by a past that I could never work out, and nor could my father. I suspected she'd had an extraordinary past, but she never spoke about it, and one would never ask her. This aloof, indefinable sadness was her bedrock. My parents gave me some basic facts. Priscilla had grown up in Paris, where she had trained as a ballerina. She had worked in pre-war Paris as a model. She had lived in France during the occupation and spent time in a concentration camp. My mother said, "That's what I was told by her when I was 17. She was captured and tortured by the Germans. I presumed she couldn't have children because she had been raped and caught an infection." She had been a vicomtesse, her first husband, an aristocratic Frenchman who never ceased to love her. Most incredible to me, given Raymond's possessive nature, was that Priscilla travelled every year with Raymond to Paris, where the couple met up with the Vicomte, her ex-husband. Being a Catholic, the Vicomte still considered Priscilla to be his wife. In order to marry him, my mother said, Priscilla had to convert to Catholicism. I loved his nickname for her, My Little Cork, although why he called her this was not explained. My mother also told me that Priscilla was at one time engaged to the actor Robert Donat, whom I had seen in The 39 Steps. And yet this interested me less than her life in France. Priscilla died in 1982, but her fate obscurely moved me. What had gone on in France? What had she done during the war? Why did she not return to England after getting out of the concentration camp? Why did her father, by then a well-known author and broadcaster, never mention on the airwaves, or to my mother, the fact that his eldest daughter was isolated throughout the war in Nazi-occupied France? I pictured her crouched before an illegal radio set in a Paris atelier, listening to my grandfather's voice on the BBC. Could Priscilla have been in the resistance? And what was the bond that existed between Priscilla and her first husband, which compelled her to keep bobbing back to see him? Priscilla was 31 when she married Raymond, and a nervous stepmother to Tracy and Carlton, who were 6 and 4 at the time. When in my 40s, having children of my own, I tried to find out more about her, Tracy let me have Priscilla's haphazardly filled scrapbook. I did not suspect that even more intimate details were to come my way, and that the scrapbook was but the first in a trail of unexpected discoveries which would give insight into Priscilla's thoughts and feelings at crucial moments in her life. On the scrapbook's opening page, scissored out of the nursing times, was a studio portrait of myself at 18 months. I'd always felt a bond with Priscilla, but not until I saw this photograph did I appreciate how she must have taken an interest in me from early on. Turning the stiff grey pages, I smelt her scent again. My father did not pretend to know what made Priscilla tick, but he was familiar with her reticence. Priscilla was like many of those in Paris in the 1950s who, having survived the war, protected their memories of it. Her years in France fell into the category of what the French call les non-dits. Not even Raymond was able to extract further information from Priscilla during the 34 years of their marriage. I know this because after Priscilla died, he told his daughter-in-law that Priscilla could never discuss with him what had happened in her previous life. Annette Howard, Priscilla's goddaughter, was raised on a story that Priscilla drove trucks during the war in northern France. Priscilla's neighbour Vicky, who had designed a dress for her, told me, "I know she'd been a pretty brave lady in the resistance." A woman called Phyllis, who had worked as a mushroom picker at Church Farm, understood that Priscilla was dropped behind enemy lines. "As a translator, that's what I was led to believe," and recalled an injury to her leg. A wound? It seemed plausible. And perhaps explained why she hid her legs and body and never wore a bathing costume when she came to stay with us. It was exciting to imagine that Priscilla might have worked in the French resistance, and that this was the reason she did not talk about her past. Why there was always a finger to its lip. Those who behave heroically say little. One day, a year or so after Priscilla died, my mother revealed to me that she had been kept in the dark about Priscilla's existence until the last months of the war. She was in her first term at Cheltenham Ladies' College when she received a letter from her father, who, pricked into action by Priscilla's return from occupied France, was writing to break the news that my mother and her younger sister Imogen had an older half-sister. Moreover, not one half-sister, but two. The idea that my mother had been unaware of her father's other family until the age of 13 was too irresistible not to follow up, and I contacted Priscilla's younger sister, Vivian. At her home in Henley, Vivian provided details of their childhood, first on the Sussex coast, and then in Paris. "Frightened of life," was how Vivian described her late sister. "When she was growing up, she was always terrified of everything, always having nightmares." Everyone had been relieved when she married the Vicomte. Vivian was present at Priscilla's wedding in Paris in December 1938, but had returned to England before the German invasion and could shine no light on Priscilla's marriage or on her life during the occupation. Nor could Vivian provide details of Priscilla's experience in the concentration camp, not even its name. In the summer of 2009, I contacted Tracy. I explained how curious I still felt about Priscilla's French past and asked if my aunt might have left behind any personal papers. "It's odd that you should ring up now," Tracy said. She had in her possession a cardboard box filled with photographs, letters, diaries and manuscripts, including a stab at a novel, which Tracy had salvaged soon after Priscilla's death from the striped padded chest at the end of her bed, on which the telly used to sit. She had never examined the contents in depth because, she said, they related to Priscilla's life before she met Raymond. Tracy had been wondering what to do with the box.
Nicholas Shakespeare was reading from his recent book, Priscilla, which is abridged in five parts by Catherine Williams. The producer is Duncan Minchell. And tomorrow, the contents of the box begin to take shape. The shipping forecast follows shortly, and to take us there, as usual, sailing by. And now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Tuesday the 14th of January. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North at Sarah, South at Sarah, Forties, Fisher, Thames, Dover, Wight, Biscay, Fitzroy, Shannon, Rockall, Malin, Hebrides, Bailey, Fair Isle, Faroes and South East Iceland. The general synopsis at 1800. Lows, Wales, 996, and 300 miles southwest of Iceland, 979, both losing their identities. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, north at Sarah, south at Sarah, northeast 40s. Southerly or southeasterly, 6 to gale 8, decreasing 4 or 5 at times. Occasional rain or snow, moderate, occasionally very poor. Southwest 40s, Cromarty 4th, Tyne, Dogger. Southerly.